Tres, dos, uno, go.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Triad of the Force podcast, a podcast from three, or in this case, two, Puerto Rican friends coming together to do deep dives into Star Wars and other nerd-related media. We're almost done with the year, but I figure we got a couple more episodes before we get into the holidays and the new year. And for everyone's benefit, this is episode 35, and the title of this episode is No Pause on Allyship, and we'll get to why it's titled that. But before we get going into our main topic of discussion, it's important to do some words of action. Make sure to share, like, subscribe, hit that bell for notifications, leave a review. I know we always say it at the end, but it's also important to remind everyone at the beginning, just so it's fresh in your mind, so you just do it now while you're listening to us. And as always, we definitely appreciate you being here. And, you know, yes, we love you. And especially Nani. We love Nani. We miss Nani. She's still on finals. I think finals actually started this past Monday. So we wish her all the luck in the world, even though she does not need any luck because she's the one that breaks the curve. But regardless,
everybody else needs luck.
Everyone else needs luck. And we wish Nani all the best so that she can jump right back up on the triad so that we can keep talking about Book of Boba Fett when that arrives, which is arriving soon. But before that, Mo, how's it going? We took last week off, so I haven't talked to you in a while. What's happening with you?
So far, so good, you know. December is always a busy month, especially in Puerto Rico, as we all know, capital of the holidays has to be. That's for sure. They last longer than anywhere else, and they're probably better than anywhere else. But that also brings a lot of preparing and, you know, setting up the house. And December is also my siblings' birthdays. So back to back.
How many of your siblings? Like all of them?
Oh, no, two.
Because I'm like, holy crap. Because you have four siblings, right? It's five of you.
Three.
Okay. That's still a lot. I should know that by now because I know you since middle school. So, oops.
So that was good. Can't complain. I'm alive. I'm well. So, thank you for asking.
Of course, I know everyone's wondering too. So it's always important to let everyone know that our mental health is doing well.
How about you, Gus? How's everything?
It's Chicago's cold. It hasn't. And the disadvantage with what's happening currently is that it's cold, but it hasn't snowed. I mean, there was a snow a couple of weeks back, but it didn't stick. And it's kind of depressing to, like, you know, have all the trees without leaves and have it be cold and windy, but not have the payoff of, you know, a nice, you know, flurry of snow and, like, make it look like a Home Alone Christmas. So it's been, you know, some seasonal blues, but I think it's passing. It's fine. At least this past weekend was a pretty good and productive weekend because I was at C2E2, the Chicago Comic Con, Comic Exposition, whatever. I don't know what it stands
Expo
for.
Expo something.
Something, Expo something. It's two C's and then two E's, and that's why it's C2E2, which was fun. It kind of felt like it was cobbled together at the last minute because I don't feel like there was a lot of cohesion to the convention. There wasn't like any big panels and whatnot. I don't know if C2E2 actually does bigger panels like San Diego or New York Comic Cons, but this year was, you know, it was pretty good because there Hayden went, Giancarlo Esposito was there, Matthew Wood, Timothy Zahn, Charles Soule, and Delilah Dawson. They were all there, so there was a pretty solid Star Wars representation. So went there Saturday and Sunday, had some fun. It was very comforting to see that everyone was taking COVID seriously. Everyone was wearing their mask except Juan Jackoff in the front of the line to get a Hayden Christian autograph. So screw that guy. But everyone else was wearing their mask. It was pretty good. They had good health screening, a good system, right, for the health screening. So felt very safe in that sense. Because it wasn't COVID, I imagine that's why it wasn't as packed as Star Wars Celebration was. So it made it feel a lot more, not to say that it was empty. It was not. There was a lot of people, but it felt a lot more comfortable and laid back. than a Star Wars Celebration. And since, you know, there wasn't a focus on Star Wars, I could just relax, which was good. So I had a good time, got a couple of autographs, got to shake Hayden Christensen's hand, compliment, you know, his Obi-Wan Kenobi production hat. Giancarlo Esposito, got to meet him. But the highlight was definitely Matthew Wood. Got to have a very nice, probably a 15-minute conversation with him. So really nice, you know, really nice person, very generous with his time and like telling us about some of the production stuff for Cassian and Obi-Wan Kenobi and Book of Boba Fett. He had told us that the day before coming to the convention, he had just wrapped up all the, you know, engineering sound stuff that he does for Book of Boba Fett. I was like, oh, I feel like I got the inside scoop all of a sudden here. Yeah, I was like, am I working for extra or something here? So that was really cool. That was really cool. So can't complain.
That is awesome.
YouTube was a blast. What?
I have to say, a little bit jealous. Although my jealousy this weekend was reserved for the Bad Bunny concerts that was happening.
Did you go?
Yeah. No.
Oh. I did see. I hope that our listeners know who Bad Bunny is. I mean, he's only the most streamed Spotify artist on the planet.
Top one in the world.
Hopefully you know, and if you don't know, get to know. There was his first concert in a couple of years, I think, back in the island. First night, I think it was a Friday, Saturday, or was it Saturday, Sunday?
Friday, Saturday.
I was reading that Saturday was a little bit did not go as planned. It started like 3 hours late and there were like a lot of technical difficulties with like letting people inside. But afterwards, it was apparently the most epic concert in the history of concerts.
Apparently so. So
there was
actually overflow section where people could actually.
Oh, right. So,
because the concert was in there, it on Beethorn. And then the Pedrin Zorrilla was also laid out. So apparently the news were, you know, craziest concert out there, but it was definitely a night of perreo, which is, you know.
El perreo intenso acaba de comenzar. For two nights in a row.
For two nights in a row. International days of perreo.
International day. Yeah, they might make it a national holiday now.
Yeah. For those, yeah, probably a blast. So I'm jealous of you, not as jealous of whoever attended.
No, it's not jealousy, because we're hopefully going to be back together at a Star Wars Celebration Anaheim this coming year. I don't know when that is, April or May, something like that. So we hopefully, you know, can return to our convention gatherings there. But I hope Bad Bunny at some point, I'm not that much of a fan of that type of music, but hopefully he crosses over into the Star Wars universe. And maybe he's like a character in The Mandalorian or the Book of Boba Fett, or even in one of the movies. And we get more Puerto Rican representation there in the film.
Exactly.
So maybe he can write a song for the cantina or something.
That would be crazy. Imagine like the whole the blue elephant singing and like touching whatever. Oh, I'm down for it.
I can see it.
I can definitely see it.
Max Rebo featuring Bad Bunny.
Bad Bunny. Hey. I'm down for that.
Weirder things have happened. But to go to the main crux of today's episode, we wanted to talk about Star Wars Eclipse. I don't remember exactly when this happened, but it was kind of a surprise. No one was expecting this trailer to drop. And I, over the past, what was it, Thursday or Friday, one of those days, randomly Disney posted a trailer for a new video game. Naturally, I don't play that many video games, but I just got, fairly recently got a PlayStation 5. So I'm like, okay, what's going to be the next Star Wars video game to come out so I can use my PlayStation 5 for a next gen video game? Because I love Fallen Order, but I can only play it so many times. All of a sudden this trailer drops and I'm like, oh Lord, here we go. Star Wars trailer. Let's get into it. And I'm not going to lie, it was a good trailer. I was very enthusiastic about it. Obviously, it was a cinematic trailer, so no gameplay. But one of the most enticing things about the trailer that like really caught my attention and really had me interested about the game was that it's set during the High Republic. And as anyone who is listening to us or is following us on Twitter knows, I'm a big fan of the High Republic. I'm reading like the books and the comic books. It's a very fun era, an era known for inclusivity, representation, and, you know, overall positiveness in terms of like POCs being a protagonist in the stories, LGBTQ plus representation in terms of like, you know, all the characters being affiliated one way or the other in the stories. And not just that, but they're good stories too, because, you know, you can't just pander and not deliver good stories. It's good stories with a good measure of representation. So based on that, I'm like, boom, this game's going to be a home run. I don't see how this game can be bad at all. And then what happens? I mean, did you see the trailer, Mo?
I did.
What did you think of? What was your first impression coming into the trailer? Although didn't go into it virgin, though. I kind of spoiled.
I was a little bit spoiled, but I still try to go with fresh eyes. First impressions is that, it looked like a beautiful trailer. Mm-hmm. But, and this just from my personal and anecdotal experience, every time for a game we see a beautiful trailer, it means that the gameplay will be lacking. So from just a gamer perspective, I was like, mm-hmm. Wait, are we getting some really fancy shots because this game is gonna suck, or is this just gonna be like the next stage of like storytelling? Like we've seen other games where, you know, you're more of an interactive movie rather than a game, which is possible. That's what we might be getting. But yeah, the first impressions in the trailer, you know, looks enticing, beautiful. It has like everything Star Wars-y you can imagine. It did seem like I was watching the trailer for some episode or a movie, not for a game.
Right, looks honest. Yeah, the graphics were like really, really good. Yeah.
So, you know, that I from a gameplay perspective, I was like, I'm hesitant now if they're relying on so much like beautiful graphics. But
well, what I was reading about that though, and we'll get into the why of this in a minute, is that a studio doing it, I'm not going to name the studio because we're not going to enable or, you know, bring negative vibes here about people that we don't want to have in the conversation. And we'll talk about why in a minute. But based apparently the studio that's making it, they are understaffed and do not have a lot of people right now working on the game because they need more people, but they're having issues hiring. And a lot of people are leaving, and apparently that's because of some issues that are going on in the culture. And what are those issues that are going on in the culture? Well, I didn't know anything about it because, like I said, I am not a gamer. I mean, I'm a gamer in the sense that I have consoles and I do play games, but I am not a gamer in the sense that I am constantly playing games, or, you know, in the know of, you know, all the background of this studio versus that studio. So in that sense, I'm a noob, I guess. Not very educated in the subject, but when I went to Twitter, our friends over at Pink Milk had a thread going on with the hashtag Blackout Star Wars Eclipse. And I'm like, that's weird. Why are we kind of going against a game that looks really good, especially in an era of Star Wars where we have very few Star Wars games? This is not like when we were in the prequel era that we had seemed like a game every 6 months or something. Yeah. Now we're just like, a game a year if we're lucky. So I'm like, we shouldn't really complain when we're getting a game. So what could be this bad that we're canceling a game about? But once you go into it and you start reading, and I was reading what our friends at Pink Milk had to say, especially like Brian and Chase, I was like, oh, this is problematic. And apparently the CEO of that company has a very problematic views about women, but in particular the LGBTQ community, and has said some very disparaging comments to both, you know, to both women and the LGBTQ community that we're not going to repeat here because it's obscene and we don't need to repeat that sort of language. If you want to know what they said, the articles are online and you can find it. But there, it's apparently a hostile work environment for minorities, POCs, like I said, queer people, and obviously women. And they don't cater to, like they've said in their quotes, games for those people, meaning anyone that's not straight or white or male, apparently. So it's like a very narrow audience, buddies. So it's very troubling that Lucasfilm and Disney would, I mean, because this is not a secret, right? You can do a quick Google search about this. I mean, you don't have to go to the FBI to do a background check to find out all these things about these people. So the fact that Disney and Lucasfilm kind of went into an agreement to develop a game with this studio with such a horrendous track record in terms of like their work, not just their work culture, but also their comments towards these groups of people is very troublesome. And I mean, it'll be troublesome by itself, but the fact that they're also hired to like do a game in an era of Star Wars that is supposed to be like the more progressive and representational of the eras that's been doing a really good job at it is really sad in a way. So it really soured the game, and justifiably so. So ever since then, I've been on the on the team of Blackout Star Wars Eclipse hashtag. So that's kind of like in a nutshell what's been going on with the game and the reaction against it. It's been interesting, though, that a lot of people, and I think we've talked about this on the podcast many a time, that a lot of liberals that are, you know, in the Star Wars community are oddly quiet about some issues and are suspiciously like the issues that don't affect them. And it's interesting because you can't call yourself a progressive and an ally if your allyship stops whenever it's not convenient, because we have to be an ally at all times and at the capacity that we're able to. So that's the title. Hey, that's the title of our podcast today. No pause on allyship. And you see, I did the little pause there as a nod to the video games. But with that, what was your reaction to like finding out the news about Star Wars Eclipse and the studio behind it?
It's interesting because it showcases the both our new society in which, you know, everything is readily available and we can find all of this information, and at the same time disappointed complete. Like, I'm amazed with that aspect, you know. We can find all of these atrocities and put them out there. You know, nothing's hidden in that sense. There's more transparency. But it's also very disappointing that, although disappointing, but at the same time revealing and confirming that, you know, Lucasfilm and Disney, you know, they don't care about anything. They just care about, you know, making money. And that's their thing. You know, they can say, or they can paint themselves as like progressive or allies, but put your money where your words are, where you're intended to. And this doesn't seem to be that way. It seems that was kind of what I feared. You know, they're just adding a flavorful of like, oh, let's add some people of color, let's add some minorities, let's have some LGBTQs, so that, you know, they're sprinkled around and we can claim that we're okay. But at the end of the day, if it's not making them money, or if they can find a cheaper way out, then this proves that that's what they're willing to do. So, you know, it's very disheartening in that sense, that either you didn't do a proper research, which is obviously you can just do a Google search on the company and the CEO. You know, that's what we all do.
You don't have to be Grand Admiral Thrawn or
exactly
to figure this out.
You don't need any degrees or anything. Mm-hmm. I'm sure Gen Z's nowadays they can do it for you as an intern. So
for free.
For free. Like,
no, I mean I agree on the for the most part about, you know, corporate cynicism. Obviously. I mean, everyone knows that when Pride Month comes along or Hispanic Heritage Month comes along and like a company like Disney is making their post, it's all, you know, it's all cynical. But it's a cynicism that I think it's trending towards the right direction because it's sending the right message. So I gotta, you know, look at it from both perspectives. But for the High Republic, though, I don't know if I completely agree with that because I do think that there's more nuance to it. I do think that, especially from the authors making these stories, I do think that they're invested in actually, you know, and committed to like making these stories paragons of representation and making like the best stories for the fans that they can. So like I don't think in that sense the High Republic is cynical for that. I do think that that department, the publishing effort, is being genuine with it. Where I do think that it starts becoming disposable in the sense of like, well, this might not make us money, so like let's just ignore this idea, is when it starts transcending markets. Because if we, at least from my understanding, right, I could be totally wrong about this, but from my understanding, publishing is the media, the Star Wars media, that has the least amount of consumption in terms of like its reach for the most amount of people. And probably after that comes video games, maybe the animated shows, or maybe they're tied. But then after that, like the live action shows, and then after that, the movies. So in that order, you know, it's the outreach that Star Wars has to people. So I think once it moves away from publishing, that's when Lucasfilm looks like they start getting more guarded in, okay, how open are we going to be about including these things outwardly in our stories? And it kind of becomes one of those things that Disney does all the time in their movies, like Beauty and the Beast and movies like that, where they're like, oh, this is our first a gay character, but then it's, you know, it's a character called LeFou and he's gay, but then you see it implied. It's not even like outwardly, you know, said, but it's implied. And then you just see it for like half a second at the end of the movie when he's dancing with a guy. That's it. It's like, well, that's not really representation then, if you're just, you know, he's peeking out of the closet. He's not out of the closet, he's just peeking out. Exactly. It's like, hey. So, but in that regard, though, I have to give it to look at Disney more. Disney has been doing more of it, and Marvel has been doing much better. So I don't understand why Lucasfilm is dragging so much, because it's publishing the, you know, like comic books and the novels and everything, like extremely good in terms of having diversity, in terms of characters of color, in terms of having women being the protagonist of stories and having LGBTQ characters. So it's time for just look. And I don't know if it's like a fear of the fandom menace or a fear of some demographic that we don't know about and they're trying to be conservative about it. But when I think about that, I'm like, but that doesn't make sense, because Marvel, yes, Marvel's not doing it perfectly either, but Marvel's doing some stuff that Lucasfilm is not. And they're both under Disney. So I'm confused here about what is happening.
I guess it's kind of like you said, you know, it depends what market they're serving, who's going to be their main audience, and who they perceive is going to be the highest paying audience they want to cater to. So I can see how publishing might tend to, you know, and again, nothing wrong. This is not, the criticism is not for the personal, you know, like author or director who's, you know, trying to put their vision of inclusivity out there. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, they're still restrained by the mechanism. Mm-hmm. If you know, if the next step of a video game is to, like, it's not only about including a certain character or not including a certain character, it's also who you give that job to. Like, if you are, and that vision is going to be completely tainted if you ask a company that's not a willing to accept inclusivity and rejects not only half of the demographic, but also another big percentage of the population, then doesn't matter even if you have those characters included, the story is not going to be inclusive because it's going to be from the only from the tainted eye view of this. In this case, you know, whoever follows that line of thought, you know, usually it like, let's not hate on all cis white men because not all cis, but it has been driven and it has been catered for them for so long that the moment that, you know, hey, let's share the table, they also feel attacked. Like, nobody's taking out, like, telling you, like, there's nothing wrong with it. We just want to be on the same table as you, have that same. So that's where the corporate cynicism goes to. Like, was this the only game company that Lucasfilm could hire? I'm sure it wasn't.
Because this is the first company that they hire, because they used to have they used to have an exclusivity contract with EA, and EA has been doing like all the Star Wars game for the last couple of years. So this is the first game that you're doing without EA. It happens to be probably the ethically the worst one you could have chosen.
It's like, it's almost like you go and like shoot yourself in the foot. And then you know, it's not only that, it's also like, you know, you just came out of the whole like Gina Carano controversy. And then you like run into the next one, like head on. Like, are you not betting then? Or is it more, or are we just seeing a new version of like how we as a society consume media, which is we're not only consuming the end product, we're also consuming everything that's in between, the process, whoever is the middle person and bring into life the final product. Because before the advent of the internet, you know, you just consume the final product, and then whatever you would come to know later, you know, that might shift or change your perspective. But now, even before we consume the end product, we're already consuming its production, the process. And that's a very interesting dynamic that I feel like I'm certain that either they've intentionally disregarded, or Lucasfilm and other big companies just haven't realized what a different world we're living in.
I think it's definitely the latter, especially from Lucasfilm, because I'm not outright going to accuse Lucasfilm of like being racist and bigots, because they're not. I just don't think that they think about optics of business decisions, because from what we've seen, their PR department does not exist at all. They never release statements about anything. They don't say like, oh, we made a mistake about this because X, Y, and Z. They're always like too politically. Like, people say that like they are PC because they do not say like anything that's gonna irritate anyone's feathers. So absolutely, because even when they fired Gina Carano, they didn't say it was because of her comments or whatever. So they phrased it in a way that tried to circumvent saying what was the reason. They just like, oh, we just didn't extend her contract and stuff like that, which is like, I mean, fine, you fired her, but you didn't take a stand against that. You just like fired her because of internet backlash, which would have been more powerful if they had been like, oh, we don't support X, Y, and Z. as she was saying, because we're, you know, these are our values. And then it's like, oh, okay, well, there we go. Now we can be more on board with your decision. So it's kind of the same thing with this Star Wars Eclipse thing, which I find really interesting, because it reminds me of the time when Disney fired James Gunn because of like past tweets that he had already apologized for years ago, but because a couple of, you know, right-wing trolls like brought them to light, Disney immediately fired him. And it's just like, well, the action was a little precocious, right? Because you should have taken a little more time to contextualize things. But at least, you know, they hired him back, and there was statements about things. So there was like some, there was action. But when I look at Lucasfilm, I'm like, it feels like there's no inertia one way or the other. It's like floating in space, no pun intended. And it's very disheartening that they either, I mean, by their silence, they say more, I feel, than they would say if they said anything. Because it's not even that they're silencing anybody or they're muffling at people. It's more like they're just ignoring it and just like hoping the fire dies out so they just can continue with whatever plans that they have. And it's, you know, it's not the way to go. I don't think it's the ethos of Star Wars. It's not what George Lucas had in mind. George Lucas was always the maverick, and he always stood for what he believed and just did it no matter what. I mean, that's, we can also debate the merits of standing your ground, because sometimes you're standing your ground on the wrong cause, but that's a separate conversation. But I don't know. I feel Lucasfilm kind of screwed the pooch on this one for sure, especially with the gaming community, because I feel a lot of people have a notion that gamers are just like, you know, cis white guys in their basement, and that they're, you know, a big group of that they're the majority of people that consume video games. But I'm pretty sure that that is not correct. There's a lot of diversity and inclusivity in the gaming community.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think that's totally skewed. Like, I think it's like close to almost like 50%, like the line. Like maybe it could have been true 20 years ago.
20 years ago.
but nowadays it's not. And I do believe, and I'm probably have to misquoting some statistic, but I think when it comes to mobile games, it's the other way around. It's males are not the majority of mobile game consumers.
Interesting.
But do not quote me on that. I am fairly certain it is almost half and half, maybe 55% mm-hmm. split, but it's not true anymore. And to
what is going to keep changing?
It's going to keep changing. And even from a very cynical, like, corporate viewpoint, how stupid can you be to alienate half of your consumers? Yeah.
Like, instead of promoting, like, hey, this is for you too. Come.
Even if
us.
You don't believe in it, like, just.
Yep. Exactly. I don't know. That's the thing that's baffling. So wouldn't you want to make more people come?
Or you want to make more money? Like,
because like you're also going to alienate like the cis white guys that do support all these things. They're also going to be like, well, I don't support that because you're excluding my friends and family that identify as those things. So like, I'm out. So by trying to target someone and keep them as your safe demographic, you're shooting yourself in the foot. So I don't know. It's very complicated. And I've seen some takes online, and like I've also had to like think about it too. It's just like, well, am I gonna like buy the game because like it looks like an interesting game and I would like to play it if it's good, but even if I don't agree with the, you know, politics of the people behind it. So this whole conversation of death of the author, it comes to mind. It's like, can you really separate the creator from the, you know, from the creation? In that sense, which is so timely, and obviously I don't want to shift gears away from Star Wars Eclipse, but it's a very similar conversation, and it's very present right now, because at the same time that we're having this and the news for Star Wars Eclipse and Blackout Star Wars Eclipse is going on, the new trailer for Fantastic Beasts came out, The Secrets of Dumbledore, which I wasn't a fan of the second movie. I did think the first one was pretty interesting. I did like the first Fantastic Beasts more than some of the Potter films. I'm like, okay, this is an interesting direction. Let's see where that goes. I did not like where it went. but then something happened, especially during what's the second one called? Oh, The Crimes of Grindelwald.
Crimes of Grindelwald.
What a bad movie. Anyway, the point is that while that movie was being either developed or after it came out that J.K. Rowling, and I'm sure that everyone who's listening knows this, but if you don't know it, sorry to burst your bubble, J.K. Rowling's a TERF. She's a bigot, and she's doubling down on her bigoted views, which was also a disappointing thing, because J.K. Rowling up to that point was known as a big ally of the LGBT, well, not LGBT, LGB community, LGBT. I guess. LGB community. She was a liberal, you know, feminist and all these things. So to that point, it's like, oh, she's an ally. But all of a sudden she came out with all these TERF things. And if you don't know what TERF is, TERF means trans exclusionary radical feminist, which is not a good thing to be. So it tainted everything, right? It tainted like the Harry Potter books. It's now like all these books about, you know, friendship and unity and coming together and all this magical world that she created that all of us grew up on, or most of us grew up on, just like had a sour taste in its mouth. So like now with her still being involved with the franchise, you know, because she's not like George Lucas, she didn't sell it off. She's not Tolkien, she's not dead. She's still very much present. She's still making money off of the Harry Potter franchise, the Wizarding World franchise. And now with this new Secrets of Dumbledore movie, it's the same thing. Like you see the trailer and it actually looks better than Crimes of Grindelwald, but that's besides the point. The point is like, can we separate, can we practice death of the author? Can we separate the author from the creation and enjoy it independently? I think it's more nuanced than just a yes or no. But especially when the author, like I mentioned, is still with us and is profiting from the works that she's still creating. Because it's not like Tolkien, right? Because Tolkien might have been Nazi sympathizer-ish, could have had some like questionable views on race, but the man is dead. We can't really question him about that. We can't cancel him. You know, we can't do anything except look at it critically now. So in that sense, I think it's easier to practice death of the author with an author or a creator that's fact. Touché. They didn't see that. I should have seen that coming. With an author that's no longer with us, but an author slash creator that's still with us, it's really complicated. I think the ethical thing is to not practice death of the author and kind of reject, or at least not contribute financially to that author's creations. I think it's interesting because it's tied to Star Wars Eclipse in that sense. Like, can we consume that media and separate it from the people that are behind it? What do you think?
I think there's a very interesting conversation, because it supposes many things at the same time. It supposes we all have the same access to the same information at all times, or that we are searching for that information. I'll speak from experience. Before the internet, or even today, I will rarely like check on something's background, you know. You know, something seemed interesting, I will consume it and then judge it by what that experience provoked in me. Right. And that will go through art, books, video games, you name it. Mm-hmm. But then that's almost like the idea of like ignorance is bliss. You're ignoring what's surrounding that final outcome. And what happens if, you know, you're not a person that's on Twitter 24/7 or follow or even following social media, then then the question then turns, with information, do you have, does that create a responsibility on the consumer as well? Like, is the consumer now responsible to also search for that background?
Mm-hmm.
Or is that just a way of consuming the media? So if I do feel with knowledge comes a certain sense of responsibility. So mm-hmm. if you are aware of that information, you know, then you know, you can't really separate, especially an author or a person that's alive currently this moment and actively discouraging or affecting and destroying the freedom and the peace of some other person, then for by all means, like, and vice versa, you know, if the person has their own opinion but they don't say anything, and you know, mm-hmm. that's their thing, then you know, kudos, like, you're not making things worse. You do have your opinion, and I'll judge right. you but that there's nothing inherently wrong with it. It's when you try to use your position then to yes, change yes. and affect and dissuade the progress and the freedoms of others. And that's what we're seeing here in this case. Like, an author that, you know, has actively discouraged and has been very critic to transgenders in general. Mm-hmm. And it is a very nuanced, because there is no yes or no answer. Like, it also goes the other way. Like, you know, what if you enjoy Harry Potter? Like, yeah. are you also going to deny that experience based on?
Right. Because Harry Potter was very transformative to a lot of people. I know it was for me, because I know, if I recall correctly, you and I went to Borders
for the midnight release
of the books. And that, you know, that was very transformative to me growing up. Those books were obviously like instrumental to kind of getting me into reading at the time. So I'm not going to deny that, you know, I really enjoy the Potter universe, and that I'm not going to stop enjoying it. But I think it's kind of like the way we buy products now too. Like, you can be an ethical consumer and like decide to buy products that come from recycled goods, or ethical vegans, or eggs that are, you know, grass-fed beef, or like, all like, you can choose like how you're going to consume it in a way that best aligns to your ethics and your values. And the same applies to like entertainment. And
absolutely,
entertainment's even more complicated, I think, to get away and around to like how you consume it, because it's pervasive in a sense. You know, it's on TV, it's in books, it's in movies, it's in theme parks. Like, for example, you know, like, I mean, like, I want to go to the Wizarding World at Universal or wherever theme park it is. It's like corporate greed is everywhere, and we can't really escape it. All we can do is like try to navigate as best as we can through it. And I think that's the important thing about how we react to not just, you know, Fantastic Beasts, but how we react to Star Wars Eclipse. And I think that I read an interesting approach to the subject, and I want to see your thoughts about it. Because, like, I'm not sure I 100% agree with it, but I do think it was an interesting take. I did see someone online that, you know, they did a pretty good Twitter thread about their thoughts on the controversy, and obviously they're an ally, but they said that they've decided to, that they are going to proceed to like buy the game, because, you know, they don't, game studios are more complex than just the CEO, and there's a lot of people that, you know, were involved in making it that don't, might not hold those views, and, you know, that the solution is not to just cut them up, blah, 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 all those things, which I can see that point. But then they said, they countered by saying, yeah, I'm going to buy the game even though I don't support the studio, and I'll just make, and when I buy the game, I'll make a contribution of the same amount that the game costs to LGBTQ plus cause, to kind of like offset the you know, the cost, right? The moral karma. Cost. Yeah. Karma cost. Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to balance it out. And I'm like, I mean, it's an interesting take. I'm like, okay. I mean, that's ethical and to an extent because you're contributing to a cost, but you're not boycotting the game or standing against it. So it's kind of like I want to have it both ways type of approach.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm not against it. Like people can do whatever they want. I'm not going to tell them how to react to something, but it's interesting to see like how people, you know, want to justify things sometimes.
It's such a human rationalizing way because the fact is that now, you know, you're equating that $60 is worth the same for both. And it's not true.
Right. It's Pontius Pilate with the silver coins when he sold Jesus. Like,
because, you know, one, you're supporting.
Not Pontius Pilate, Judas, sorry.
Yeah. No. I'm just thinking now. I'm just thinking like a lawyer. Like, one, because there's no equivalent exchange. Because one, you're supporting a big organization that systematically is putting the message of hatred out there, which you might say, oh, it's only 60, but you know, it's the same, you know, it's one grain of sand. You need all the grains of sand to make a beach. And
right.
And then the impact that $60 might have on a small underfunded LGBTQ+ help aid, which those $60 might equate to potatoes, nothing. Like, I mean, not again, not to dissuade people from donating. It's not potatoes.
Every bit counts. Yeah.
Every bit counts, but.
In terms of
you're feeding a machine that's already making a profit and churning a message that's gonna have a bigger cost in a sense, mm-hmm. because maybe for each game they sell, that means X amount of people that get they don't have access to the right information or mm-hmm. they're actually, you know, driven into more bigotry or hatred, right, versus right. $160 that, you know, either you can help one person out, but it's not equivalent. So mm-hmm. then you will have to do a whole economic assessment of what $60 is equivalent to the donation. And then you're just putting that people are just numbers and, are you just playing the same game that they're playing? Like, are we just money and that's it? Like,
yeah.
I know, offense to anybody. I don't know.
I don't want to. I don't want to make it seem like we're like attacking that type of mentality because I think it's still, you know, I still think it's kind of a net positive because
it's an interesting mentality.
Maybe someone that's not gonna buy the game and support, you know, a boycott of the game is not gonna donate to LGBTQ+. So in terms of your net contribution to charity, the other person's contributing more than you. So it depends on like how you look at it. So
it depends on your like framing. Said,
exactly. Nuance is the word.
And for by all means, I'm sure some Twitcher out there can get the game and then stream it and hate on the company all the 24/7 hours that they're playing the game. And they're going to influence and make a ton of money, but at the same time, they're going to help the game not. So, you know,
that is my stance with the Fantastic Beasts movie. It's like, I'm not going to go see it in theaters. I'm not going to pay to stream it.
When it pops up on HBO Max.
I might find a website. Well, yeah, exactly. But if it doesn't pop up on HBO Max sooner, I might find a website and I might download it and I might see it. I'm not gonna say I will do those things just in case the FBI is listening. Copyrights. But yeah, as long as I'm not contributing to Joanne, or as she's colloquially known as J.K. Rowling, that's the notion. It's just not supporting them financially to enable their platform.
That's interesting, because now would modern day Robin Hood be an internet pirate?
I think internet pirates have always been internet. I mean, modern day Robin Hoods. Always. Like Napster, since the days of Napster, I'm like, yeah, let's do it. They changed the industry. If it weren't for them, we wouldn't. I mean, in a way, the industry self-corrected. But at least it self-corrected in a way that made things a little more accessible to everyone, as opposed to, you know, having like this monopoly on individual albums, or when it was iTunes, individual songs. Like because of Napster, we had to recourse to Spotify, and because of Pirate Bay, we had to recourse to Netflix to an extent. So yes, they are modern Robin Hoods. They did provide, and there's a lot of people that also don't have, like, we're privileged and we do have access to those things and are thankfully in a better financial situation where we can afford some of these streaming services and are able to access it. Some people don't. So in a way, like, they shouldn't be punished either for not being able to consume that media. We all deserve entertainment. Entertainment's a right to an extent. And I do think that if, you know, you can download, I'm not going to say do it, but I'm saying, like, if you're hungry, you steal an apple. I don't think that's a problem. If you're starved for content, you can't afford it. I don't see a problem with if someone gives you a link to something and you happen to hit it by accident and it happens to open on your computer, I don't think there's an issue with you watching it. Maybe. I don't know. I'm not advocating for any of these behaviors.
But it's interesting because it is those behaviors that actually also make a show. Because, like, take for example, Game of Thrones. It happened to be the most pirated show out there. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like a way of marketing.
Yeah.
Because you know, you already have everybody that's going to pay. But then you have an extra layer of everybody that's going to pirate it. But everybody that pirates, you cannot pirate. I mean, I guess you can pirate merchandise. That is totally feasible. But there's a good chance that they're still buy.
That's called plagiarism. It's different. Yes, it's not tangential, but you know it's there.
Technically a little bit different.
It's technically different. Yeah. But well, you would know better. You're the lawyer.
So it's piracy then. The consumer's weapon against, I mean, apart from calling everybody out, like, you know, we're doing in Twitter, like, you know, you call them out, blackout Star Wars eclipse, like, it's there. But it's the second layer that a piracy is.
Again, with the caveat that I'm not advocating for this, if you want to know my real views
Disclaimer yes, alert. We yeah. try to have the force. That's not
we do
endorse.
Not, we do not or, condone do not the anything. Illegal yeah, transfer.
And everything said here is for goods. Entertainment and purposes only.
No. This is a little theoretical exercise. My lawyer over here is, you know, just make sure that you do what they're saying. What was I saying? Oh, but in this theoretical experiment, this hypothetical experiment, I 100% say yes, because the only way that these companies, you know, learn about these things is like financial, you know, if they have financial loss. Yeah,
it's the money.
It's capitalism.
That's all they care about.
Yep, it's capitalism. The only way capitalism responds to anything is by how the consumers respond to them. So the only way to do that is by either not consuming or consuming in a way that affects them negatively, so that they, you know, correct and give us the products that we as consumers are asking for. And I think that there's a lot of hunger for these types of products. I think, especially going back to now to close off Star Wars Eclipse, especially with things like the High Republic that have proven to be a success in terms of a publishing effort. Light of the Jedi, The Beauty of Number One, a couple of the other novels have also been on the New York Times bestselling list. The comics are, you know, there's sell out, so there's multiple prints going on. So like, it's an era that's gotten a lot of love and affection, a lot of traction, a lot of IOC's making money because they're not stopping it. They're keep publishing. So, and on Twitter, there's, you know, there's a lot of positive fandom towards it. So it is a product that people want. People want a product with diversity and inclusion. I know that we definitely want that. So hopefully Lucasfilm and Lucasfilm Games and Disney, whoever needs to listen, listens and address it, acknowledges it, and changes for the better. But with that, I think we're wrapping up today's episode. I think it was a very good discussion about Death of the Author, Star Wars Eclipse, like how do we consume media, and obviously representation, which, you know, if you're listening to us, you're interested in our thoughts on representation. But one final thought before most final thoughts. Friday, this Friday the 16th, is right? Friday is this? 16th. No, Friday the 17th. Friday the 17th, there's going to be like a bigger blackout Star Wars Eclipse Twitter event to try to get that trending and create more visibility for us. So if you agree and you support it, make sure to go on Twitter and, you know, tweet out your support to it with any anecdote or story or whatever you want addressing this controversy with Star Wars Eclipse, and make sure to use the hashtag blackout Star Wars Eclipse. But with that, Mo, do you have any like final thoughts to conclude this spirited conversation?
I'm interested in your future outlook. Do you think Lucasfilm is going to change their game developer over this, knowing that they already have a plan delayed on the game? Mm-hmm. Do you think though this will have enough traction to change things, or do you think this won't have?
Right now I'm 50-50 on it, and the only reason that I'm 50-50 on it is because of Lucasfilm's track record with announcing things and dropping them. like there's so many things that they've announced that they just drop without letting anyone know that they dropped it and canceled it and moved on to something else. But I think that this could be one of those things where they're like, oh, this was a bad reaction, so they just like quietly never mention it again and then just move on from there. I don't know if they'll do an active acknowledgement of it to try like to salvage it or something, but I think it's 50-50 at this point, especially if like this keeps getting traction. It's only been a couple of days, so we'll see. I'm hopeful, but then again, you know, we're a Star Wars fan, so like we're known for our hope and our naivete, so we'll see what happens. We'll see after Friday what comes from. If we get a trending, then maybe something might happen.
Interesting. Let's see. I hope. We'll see what happens.
I see. But with that, thank you so much, everybody, for joining us again. I hope you enjoyed this conversation. I know it's more controversial. I mean, it shouldn't be controversial, right? If you listen to us, you know that we're about inclusiveness and representation. So it shouldn't surprise you that these are our thoughts. But again, thanks for listening to them. We appreciate you. We'll see you at the next one. We hope you keep having a fantastic holiday. Don't forget to share, like, and subscribe. If you like what you've been hearing or seeing, if you're looking in YouTube, make sure to leave a comment. If, you know, if you don't agree with us, or if you do, just leave a comment. We can have a debate about it. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Just follow us at Triad of the Force, and you'll be able to find us. If you do like us more than just a follow, make sure to go to our TeePublic store, where we have a bunch of cool Star Wars designs for you to wear. We're in the holiday, so everything's on sale. So you'll get them for cheaper. I don't know if you'll get them on time for Christmas, because everything's
delayed. It'll be a great gift, or you know,
but
what?
It will
be King's Days. Sorry.
Exactly. Exactly. Get it for, I think it's called the Epiphany in English, actually, if I'm not mistaken.
Epiphany?
I think Three Kings Day in, like, in English is the Epiphany. We'll have to look that up. If anyone knows, let us know in the comments below. But with that, thank you so much. We have been Triad of the Force. May the Force be with you.